But it's time we returned to Atisha and his journey. It took him 2 years to reach the Nari region of western Tibet. And this was partly because he spent on the way a whole year in Nepal. We know the route he followed. And we know that he made the first half of his journey on the back of an elephant, presumably supplied by the king. And the second half he made on horseback. He was accompanied by about 30 people, including monks and translators. And we do know quite a lot about his journey. I'm not going to say much about it. I want to get Atisha to Tibet as quickly as possible. So I'll just outline the route he followed, just in case anybody feels like following in his footsteps at some point, which wouldn't be a very difficult thing to do. From Vikramashila, he went to Bodh Gaya and there made offerings, paid his respects to the Vajrasana, the site of the Buddha's enlightenment, and then he went straight up into Nepal, into the Kathmandu Valley, to the Swayambhunath Chaitya, or stupa, which of course is still there, and which of course some of you have visited. It's on the outskirts of the present-day Kathmandu. From there, he proceeded in a westerly direction and eventually arrived in Palpar in western Nepal. Some of you may remember, those of you who've read my memoirs, that in 1950, I spent some time in Palpar. It was then the capital of Nepal, but when I visited it, it wasn't really much more than an overgrown village. There, he stayed quite a while. Atisha wrote books there, and with the king's help, he built and endowed a large monastery. And from Palpar, the party made its way to Lake Manasarovar. And those of you who have read Lama Govinda's Way of the White Clouds will remember his wonderful description of the magical beauty of that lake. Atisha was now in Tibet, and from the famous lake he travelled to Thon, and from Thon to the Nari area of western Tibet. He was given a splendid reception by the local rulers and accommodated in the Thon Lin Monastery, and this was his headquarters for the next 3 years. These 3 years were of crucial importance for the success of his mission. During them, he met Rinchen Zangpo, the greatest Tibetan scholar of his time. There also he composed his most important and influential work, and he also met the man who became his chief Tibetan disciple. But before dealing with these major events, I want to mention just one minor one, by way of light relief, as it were. Yeah, perhaps some of you are feeling the need of a little light relief by this time. This particular event, this minor event, occurred when Atisha reached the Tibetan border. Of course, he was received, as I've mentioned, by a delegation, by local rulers, made him very welcome. And of course, he'd been travelling, perhaps he was thirsty, so they offered him a drink in a porcelain cup, rather beautiful porcelain cup, which are with dragons on it. And Atisha liked the drink, and he asked, "What's this delicious drink?" And one of the translators told him it was called cha, tea. Of course, it was Tibetan tea prepared with salt and butter. But Atisha seems to have taken to it, and according to Tibetan sources, he even composed a poem in praise of tea. But let us go back to the main story. Let's go back to the meeting with Rinchen Zangpo. As I've said, Rinchen Zangpo was a great scholar. He had studied the Dharma in India, In fact, he'd made 3 trips there. He had translated many Sanskrit texts into Tibetan, mainly Perfection of Wisdom or Prajnaparamita texts, and many, many tantras. And he's therefore still referred to as the great translator. He had also founded many temples and monasteries, not only in Western Tibet, but also in what is now Ladakh and other parts of what is now northwest India. At the time of Atisha's arrival in Nari, in Western Tibet, Rinchen Zangpo was 85 years old, even older than Atisha. So he was quite a distinguished person, and we may say that he was a member of the religious establishment. And at first, perhaps not surprisingly, he treated Atisha with a certain amount of reserve, because until Atisha's arrival, he'd been the leading Buddhist monk in the area. But thanks to Atisha's not just diplomatic but genuinely Buddhist behavior, Rinchen Zangpo was won over. We are told that Rinchen Zangpo on one occasion invited Atisha to come and stay with him for a while at his monastery. So Atisha accepted the invitation, went along to the monastery, maybe with some of his disciples, and he found that this monastery was a large and beautiful one with many images of all the different Buddhas and Bodhisattvas arranged apparently in different chapels. So on his arrival at the monastery, Atisha just went round all these chapels, no doubt escorted by Rinchen Zangpo, and he paused just for a few minutes in front of each and every image, whether of Tara, Avalokiteshvara, Shakyamuni, Tathagatapatra, Manjugosha. There must have been hundreds of them. And each time he stopped, he recited in Sanskrit a verse in praise of that particular Buddha or Bodhisattva. So Rinchen Zangpo hadn't heard these verses before, and he thought, well, they're really beautiful. I wonder, where Atisha learned these, who wrote them. So when Atisha had finished his tour of all these chapels and had finished reciting all these verses in praise of all these different Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Rinchen Zangpo said, well, excuse me, but what stotra were you chanting? Where did you learn it? When was it composed? So Atisha said, oh, I just composed those verses on the spot, spontaneously. So this shows not only Atisha's great devotion, but his great skill in the spontaneous production of poetry in Sanskrit shloka form. So Rinchen Zangpo began to have a great respect for Atisha. The next incident is not so easy to explain. There are different accounts, in fact, of what happened, even different interpretations. It seems that Rinchen Zangpo used to get up very early in the morning, and he used to practice tantric meditation. He used to practice, it seems, tantric sadhanas of different Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in various combinations, various mandalas, and so on. It seems that in the morning, Atisha asked him how he had practiced. And it seems that Rinchen Zangpo replied that he practiced all those different sadhanas separately, one after the other, as though one had to be added to the others in order to produce, so to speak, the total effect. Apparently he was under the impression, so far as we can understand, that they were essentially different from one another. So Atisha disagreed. He explained that all the different sadhanas should be practiced together. and one practiced them together by practicing any one of them deeply. For in principle, all sadhanas were the same. So there was no question, therefore, of finishing with Tara and then going on to Manjugosha, as though there was something in the Manjugosha sadhana, essentially, which was not in the Tara sadhana. He explained that what you encountered in the depth of your own practice of particular sadhana, you also encountered in the depth of the practice of any other sadhana. So in a sense you needed to practice only one sadhana. You didn't have to sort of collect sadhanas, as though it was only the totality of all the sadhanas considered separately that helped you to achieve what you wanted to achieve through the tantric path. So Rinchen Zangpo was greatly impressed by this explanation, and he felt more respect than ever for Atisha. And thereafter he helped him with his translation work. And when Atisha left Nari, Rinchen Zangpo shut himself up in his room and devoted himself entirely to the practice of meditation, as explained by Atisha. And he did this for 10 years. And it's said that eventually he attained enlightenment. By that time he was nearly 100. So this shows one is never too old to learn.